So as the children demonstrated, this word love is very easy, right? I mean, everyone knows what it means. But I do think we all can appreciate that difficulty they experienced when asked to define it. In particular, what did you mean when you said, I love you? Like, well. And there's a number of reasons why I think this is difficult for us. It's a familiar word, and this command to love God and love our neighbor is familiar. As I said, our liturgy is sort of written around this, in particular our confession. And sometimes the familiarity, the commonness of it is, you know, can be a problem for us as we try to understand what's going on. It's hard to sort of think about something that's so natural or so easy or so familiar. But the word itself, I think, is also difficult because it has such a wide range of meanings. And that's not just in our context, but we for sure use the word love in a variety of things, from some quite trivial to some when we're trying to communicate some of the most important and deepest thoughts or aspirations or feelings, emotions. This one word, love, carries that. And the ancient world isn't any different. Like this word that is in Leviticus and Deuteronomy, so Jesus is quoting Deuteronomy and then he's quoting Leviticus for the second commandment. And we heard the passage from Leviticus as our first reading. But this word in the Jewish language was also multi-purpose. It ranged anywhere from God's love and a mother or father's love for their child to Isaac's love for the savory stew that Esau would make for him when he went out hunting. And a lot of stuff in between. Now, there's also other words that can be used when we want to talk more about sort of a romantic love or something like that. But this word love carries a wide semantic range. And so that's kind of, I think, some of the difficulty in that. But for sure, it reminds us that love is a relational term and it carries with it some emotional impact. It's not solely or primarily perhaps an emotion, but it does contain that. So I think when I say I love you, or when I say I love you, God, at times at least I'm saying there is some kind of warm feeling, or, you know, I don't know if it's a warm feeling. I don't think it's wet or sticky, you know, I think it's more warm than, but you know what I mean. I'm alive, I'm aware of something going on inside me emotionally. And so I'm excited or I'm drawn or I'm fond, and again, what exactly it is, I don't know, but there it is. And so that's part of it. But especially, I think, when it comes to loving our neighbor, the difficulty is, if it's an emotion, how can I command, or how can God command me to have a certain emotion? And am I truly supposed to feel warm towards those that God has called me to love? Is that what Jesus is saying? Love your neighbor as yourself. Go out and manufacture these warm, fuzzy feelings for everybody. Well, no, probably not. I think Jesus has something else in mind. Because when we think about it and reflect on it, love includes some very practical, intentional actions. Especially if you think about, if you've had children, most of your children are now adult. Not everybody's quite at that stage of their journey. But when you reflect on 20, 30, 40, 50 years of loving your child, and I assume you still love, I'm not quite there yet, but I assume you still love your child. But what do you mean by that? Well, you still feel warm, perhaps, but that's not the only thing. You actually did a lot of concrete actions. And what motivated those concrete actions? What made them loving or an expression of love? Well, I believe it's that you intended to do what was good for that person. Even if from the child's perspective, they're like, well, mom or dad, you disappointed me. You wrecked my plans. You hurt me. You know, you were harmful in this instant or in these circumstances. And then you would say, well, I might have bungled it, but I really hope that you would learn something important and that you would grow. And I was trying to save you from what I knew to be harmful and hurtful long term. You know, there are things that can cripple you inside. And I was trying my best to keep those influences out of your life because I love you. I didn't feel warm and fuzzy. I did what I could to see you flourish, thrive, and grow. I did everything that I could to add value to your life and to open you in your life up to the best possible future. So that's got to be part of what it means to love. Concrete, intentional choices and actions that have the well-being of the other as the goal or the purpose or the intent. Doesn't always work out that way for us as humans, but that's what I think we're being called to do. Now, I think this, you know, this is made more clearly when we remember what Jesus said earlier in Matthew's Gospel and the Sermon on the Mount. And Jesus gave us there what's called the golden rule. And he doesn't use the word love. He says, treat or act, do to others, the very thing that you wish people would do to you. The same way you want to be treated, treat others. Now, there's no emotion being asked for here. There's just kind of this honest and clear-sighted choice to meet the needs of others, because that's exactly what I would want people to do for me. If I'm hungry, it would be great if somebody said, hey, Oz, you're hungry. Here, can I help? If that is true, then that's my response that I'm being asked to give to others. Act the way to other people that you would desire people to treat you. And so I think that's an important reminder for us as we think about love your neighbor as yourself. We can get lost in this whole sort of love thing. As I said, it's difficult to identify. Unless you know a better answer, you can grab those kids afterward and say, you know, oh, it's really dropped the ball there. This is how you define love. You know, next time someone says, you know, knock yourselves out. Go at it. But so love entails this intentionality. Paul, when he's talking in Ephesians chapter 5, he says, and he says that husbands should love their wives, and he uses this example as Christ loving his the church by giving himself for the church. And he says, husband, love your wives as your own self. And then he goes on to say, for no man hates himself or his body, but instead he nourishes and cherishes it. And that's, again, this practical sort of suggestion. He's not saying husbands, although it's good if you got the warm, fuzzy feelings for the spouse and vice versa, that's all good. You know, do what you can to keep that alive. But what God's asking you to do is to nourish and cherish, to find opportunities to say, how can I add to what's good in your life and see that you have the conditions under which you can flourish? How can I contribute to your growth and your development, your safety, your well-being, your peace of mind? And so, anyhow, I think these are important reminders for us. Now, these don't all necessarily translate into a love of God. Like, what kind of needs of God am I meeting? And I think it's important for us to hear this connection that Jesus makes. I think this word like, the first commandment, great commandment, love God, heart, mind, body, strength. There's another commandment like to love your neighbor. And this like ties not just as in, here's another good thing for you to remember. This says, another way to say this, we could hear Jesus is saying that. Love God. Now, I know that's going to be a little too abstract for you folks. So what I mean is love your neighbor, because loving your neighbor is the only way you can love God. Now, I might feel bad saying that if John, the Epistle of John, 1 John, if John doesn't say, you cannot, it's an impossibility, to love the invisible God if you don't love the visible human who is in the image of God, who is the child of God. You can't love the parent and hate the child. Maybe. Anyway, but this is the logic for John, because he knows how easily it is that we as humans want to find some sort of escape clause. Like, yeah, I was loving God today. It was woo-hoo. And then like, hey, jerk, out of my way. Me and God, we're tight. Eh, what do you guys think? You know, like, no, he says, that doesn't work that way. It doesn't. Your love of God is as strong as your love for each other. So when Jesus says, here's the great commandment, and so I know you're going to want to find an escape clause here, you need to realize that that means you love your neighbor like yourself. If there's something good for yourself that you would desire or long for, you find conditions under which you can provide that for others. And thereby you love God. And the second thing, of course, is that we can't truly love one another without a love for God. Love of God transforms us from our selfishness or our self-eccentricities, from our myopic, right, our tunnel vision or our narrow vision or our short-sightedness. Love of God expands and opens up so that I might truly love you in a way that is for your good, as opposed to in a way that's trying to make you what I want you to be, or, you know, any number of ways in which love can become a manipulative tool instead of something that builds into the life of others. But when we think about loving God, I wanted to think about another way in which this term love works. And I think that love represents some sort of goal or some sort of draw. If you love something, that means that you're attracted to that thing, I think, right? I think that's fair to say. I love you, but I'm repulsed by you. No, probably not. Like, let's use a different language here, you know? One of the others isn't true. I might struggle with loving you, but yeah, you know, to give in to revulsion is not probably accurate. So, and this is the way we use the word love. So, but we don't always think about this, that what we love is sort of a center or something that draws us or draws us to itself, because we have many loves in our world. But you might catch yourself, so, you know, you might say, I love hockey and I love golf, and oh no, there's hockey and golf at the same time. Now I'm in a dilemma. What do I do? Well, now I know which one's the truer love, right? Now let's say I love golf. I don't golf. Golfed once in my life. So this is all hypothetical, and I know you golfers will be able to poke holes in my analogy. Let's say I love golf. And what does that mean? Well, that means that if it's hockey or golf, I'm going for golf. I'll just catch up on the hockey later. It means that I spend time thinking about golf. It means that I actually go golfing, right? I don't love golf and then never tee off, never bother to, like, be out there on the green. It means probably that I got a nice set of clubs and probably a new bag. You know, the old bag is a little split, you know, and I've got all these sort of funky things, like little plush velvet covers for the heads of my golf clubs. Whew, nice. Deep purple. I like purple. And, you know, there it is on the golf club. I shine these babies. I, like, take them out, just kind of admire them, watch in the mirror. Whew, yeah, you know, there it is. I love golf, right? In fact, you know what? When I pick up a newspaper, I flip to the sports section and I scan right past hockey, right past football, golf. Is there a golf section in newspapers? Probably not. But, you know, during the Masters or something, right? I can give you Tiger Woods stats. And I can talk about the guys who were better than Tiger, but, you know, because they were, when golf was a real game, you know. Or whatever. I know golf. I'm walking through the mall. It's almost Christmas time, not really, but the stores think it's almost Christmas time. And all of a sudden there's like golf-related things. And, oh, well, yeah, maybe that would look nice under the tree, so I make the mental note, Right? I walk right by whatever else, tractors or, you know, whatever else is in the mall. There's the golf stuff, right? It just jumps out at me. I hear it in conversation. I intrude. And I insert myself in random strangers' conversations because I heard the word golf and I kind of listen. There's my in. I'm like, you too? What green is your favorite around here? Well, in the fall, I like this green. Midsummer, that's desperate green, like no shade. So I'm over, you know, I got this whole thing. And guess what? You ask anybody if I love golf, and they'll say, yeah, he loves golf. He loves golf, no doubt about it. Now, if I said I love golf and none of those things are true for me, or only one or two of those, then probably you'd be like, no, he likes golf. He's not a lover of golf, let's face it. You know, where you go and look at where his clubs are after the game. Or not the game, after. Is it a game? I don't know what it is. You know, I was out there hitting the ball around. And my clubs, I left them in the trunk of the car for 2 weeks, and they were rattling around, so finally I just kind of threw them out in the corner of the garage. Now, I don't love golf then, do I? I might play the game. I don't love it. So here's the point, folks. When you love something, it begins to be a center point and a focal point. It begins to exert a force and an attraction in your life so that you begin to orbit around it and you begin to organize other things in your life, like little satellites. Like you think about the earth and the moon and the sun. If we didn't have a sun, the earth would just keep drifting, I think, off into space until it found some sun, and then it would begin to get pulled into an orbit. And the moon would come along with us because the moon orbits the sun because we're orbiting the sun, because the moon orbits the earth. And other things in my life make sense and are organized as they join this orbit around the thing that I love. And when I'm kind of wandering off, it pulls me back in. That's what it means to love. And that's, I think, a good way for us to think about Jesus' reminder that we should love God. Heart, mind, and strength. There's some really wonderful things that happened when Jesus came. A lot, you know, more than we can treat today. But here's, I think, the chief one. After several centuries of a people saying yes to this, God, we will love you. The Shema, which Mark gives us the opening of, hear, O Israel, the Lord your God is one Lord, and thou shalt love the Lord thy God. It's repeated twice daily by the Jewish people, by the devout Jewish believer. But as we understand, and according to the revelation given through Jesus Christ, this love never took root, never became, or I shouldn't say never. Generally speaking, it was an impossible task to love God. And that's what idolatry is, to have something else in that center. My life is orbiting around something else besides God. That's what it means to be an idolater. It doesn't mean to have idols or, you know, little figurines. It means in my life, we all have something we orbit around, and when that is not God, then I'm an idolater. And what Jesus came to do was to do two things. First of all, to say, remember what the important thing is. The important thing is that you love God. That's the important thing. The second thing is to realize that you can't do that by yourself. And that's what I'm here for, is to share my life with you. This is the way Jesus lived his life, right? Orbiting around God. In John's gospel, he says, as the Father, what I'm doing right now is what I saw the Father doing. What I'm telling you right now is what I heard the Father saying. My words are not my own. They're the Father's words. My deeds are not my own. They're the Father's deeds. And that's the way that Jesus lived, and he invites us into this. And that's, I think, we owe an enormous debt that Jesus shares with us his very life. Because if this truly does summarize the entire law. Have you read the law recently? That is the book of Leviticus. If this is truly what summarizes and makes living all of those other commands as we opened up in Leviticus 19, be ye holy because I am holy, says God. Be holy. How do I be holy? Well, I love God. So if it's truly the way to fulfill the command, then it's not going to be that easy for me. And Jesus comes and shares his very life with me. Because, as John, again, reminds us in his epistle, that is 1 John, he says, this is love. Not that we love God, but that he first loved us. And so love of God, this whole orbiting around, this whole centering, this whole being drawn in, begins because of the love of God exerting first on our hearts and lives this pull. It's not ours to generate. It's ours to receive. Why won't you pray with me? We confess, God, that we are just children when it comes to these great mysteries, and especially this great command to love you. Just children, meaning that we hope to be simple enough to open our hearts to it. But children in that we fail. We're not wise enough. We're not strong enough. We're not good enough. Be pleased, God, to draw us and call us through your love. And when we wander, Lord, may that be the pull, the draw that brings us back into orbit. Have mercy on us, God. Through your Son, Jesus Christ. Amen.